We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here's Matt Michaels and Brad Trenago.
And welcome in once again, another rousing edition of the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. I'm Matt Michaels. Brad Trenago is alongside. Hello.
Hello, sir.
Howdy.
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I am doing well. Got a lot to get to today, including some of the diamonds that are opening up in mid-Missouri and in Columbia. We'll hear from softball coach Larissa Anderson in a moment. Right now, though, a reminder that the podcast today brought to you by Shelter Insurance. They're recently ranked highest in customer satisfaction among auto insurers in the Central Region 3 out of 4 years in a row, and number one in price by J.D. Power. Shelter Insurance, we're your shield, we're your shelter. A coach that has built a program to be one of the top 16 in the country, bona fide, bar none, without debate. And more to come this year. Larissa Anderson joins us now on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes with us, Coach. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's my pleasure to be here.
You know, everybody thinks back to the memories of last season where they were in the stands at Mizzou Stadium and everything was full and people were able to get out in a crowd again. I mean, there was so many things going on with that. It feels like that's a measure of energy that has been building around your program, excitement for, you know, from the moment that you were able to step on campus and a bit of a culmination in some sorts in that event.
You know, it's exciting to look back over the 3 years and really what we started to build when I first came here on campus. And then, you know, this past season, I think it was really a perfect storm where all of a sudden the NCAA opens up attendance and we get 100% capacity. And the city of Columbia was so excited to watch a sporting event live and then being able to host and host regionals and super regionals. I mean, it was the ideal situation for our program and for our young ladies to experience that. And the energy around our program right now is very contagious in opening up season tickets. And I've been told that we've maxed out with season tickets renewals, which has been tremendous for our program. And, you know, just hoping that we get a warm early spring, that we're able to get outside and everyone can watch some Mizzou softball again.
And we were just talking about before we went on here live about how it can be kind of challenging being the northernmost team in the SEC, not being able to get actually outside and practicing as much as some of your southern counterparts in the conference. So what do you try to do this time of year to try and make sure your team is ready to go when the season starts in mid-February?
You know, the big thing is philosophy, that it doesn't matter if it's a ground ball inside Devine or if it's ground ball, like I said, and we take in Hearn's indoor track facility, or if we're taking it outside on our field or taking it down in Florida, it's still a ground ball. The ground ball doesn't know where it's coming from. So it's making sure that we can control what we control, and that's our energy and our effort that we put into, and that we're always going to be fundamentally perfect. So believing in that and having a strong foundation with that, then we know that we're truly prepared regardless of where we go and where we open up.
I mean, are there some coaches across the league who go, man, I wouldn't want to be dealing with that. I'm glad I have sunshine and at least 50 degrees. Like, you guys can go ahead and be in Columbia, Missouri, or be in Lexington, Kentucky, if you want to put it that way, and you deal with the weather. I am happy down here on the coast.
You know, what's funny is that we'll have college or high school and travel ball coaches that will call different coaches around the country. And this travel ball coach reached out to one of our SEC competitors, and they were in the Southeast, and they wanted to know how you can plan some indoor practices. And this coach said, I have no idea because I'm outside all year long, so you better call Larissa at Mizzou and be able to help you out with some indoor practice plans.
Yeah, it's funny too, so you were at Hofstra. I didn't realize that the New York Jets, the NFL team, their practice facility was right there, and you guys were able to get some time in there, so you've got some experience in NFL facilities even to practice.
You know, absolutely. I mean, you take it with what you have and you make it work. I mean, our game is an individual game just played with a team. So we do have to spend a lot of time inside in different facilities and be able to take, you know, exactly what we have and be able to execute that with our players.
Yeah, you know, skill work is a word that comes up for coaches and for teams at this time of season. Inside or outside, the skills that you work on to begin a year are pretty much the same. Every coach more or less starts with the fundamentals. I suppose that's really an adaptable plan, right, for your team at this time of year?
You know, we always start with our fundamentals. And if I went back and I give you our exact philosophy within our program, it's to make every individual the best possible player that they can be. So we spend so much time on the individual. And then we take the individual skills the same way if you take basketball and you have to learn to dribble, pass, and shoot. Like, those are the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And then you apply it to whatever position you're playing. We do the exact same thing with softball. So they have to learn all the footworks, all the throws, all the flips, all the sways, all the darts, all the tags, and then apply it to whatever position they're playing, and then we work on our system. But if now we concentrate on every single individual, and every individual on the team gets better every single day, our team automatically is going to be better. So when we first came here to Mizzou 4 years ago, it was looking at the individuals and saying, we're just going to get better because we're going to make every single individual better.
So how do you simulate a fly ball in the sun when you're inside? Do you have like a bat signal that you shine down from the roof into their eyes, or how do you do that?
Well, even if it's, a, you know, 4 degrees out or 30 degrees out and the sun is shining, we'll just take the kids outside and have them not look directly into the sun, but look up into the sky and take their glove and take their bare hand to be able to block that sun out and show them how they position their body in different angles. But if we don't get outside and it's cloudy for those 30 days that we're practicing, then literally it's look up and there's a light bulb and just imagine that that's the sun. But when we travel for our first trip, we'll make sure we get down there early so we do have at least one practice outside on dirt. It'll be down in Florida, so you know you're going to have sun shining, so be able to take advantage of that.
You know, consult your local experts and don't listen to me, but they did have a solar eclipse go past here a few years ago, and there might be some of those eclipse glasses floating around. I'm not saying that you should stare directly into the sun with eclipse glasses. I'm not saying that. But if a doctor said that, then maybe you could, you know, I don't know.
We
just
might
an
have
idea.
To look into that next okay. Solar eclipse.
No, that sounds good. Larissa Anderson with us here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast as the Tigers get set for competition, really just weeks away. I mean, the fact that your season starts really in early February instead of middle or late February, it gives you guys, I feel like, a compressed timeline to get all of that work in. I know that you're used to it, but does it feel like it always seems to happen sooner and sooner every year that you're in the middle of difficult competition?
You know, 19 practices left. I mean, not that I'm counting down or anything, but, you know, it's tough. And I can tell you, I serve on the executive board for the NFCA, the National Fast Pitch Coaches Association, and we've been trying to push our season back because February is not spring. I mean, only two parts of the country that can play in February, and that's Southern Florida and Southern California. So a lot of schools around the country have to all travel. You know, then and it's tough for our sport, it's tough for our fan base. So we've been trying to push our season back, and I know baseball is trying to do the same thing. So, you know, those that are listening out there, that, you know, be an advocate to move softball and baseball actually to the spring and not in February. But it is tough. But again, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint.
What's another top issue or two? What's another top issue or two that you guys are facing in the NFCA?
They get that fourth coach. Mm-hmm. So the NCAA has recognized that we do need a fourth coach. That's our volunteer assistant. But they're not paid by the university. They don't get health insurance by the university. They can't participate in recruiting off campus. So me being an educator, I'm trying to mentor these young assistants to further their career. And there's a huge aspect of the coaching profession they can't experience. So I'm really not doing due diligence preparing them for the profession. You know, if you are allowed to have an unrestricted fourth coach, and I don't care if they're paid or not, but allow them to participate in the entire profession. And I think at least give them health benefits. I mean, Maddie Norman's our volunteer assistant, and if she was to get hit with a line drive pitching BP, we can't help her medical coverage, which I just think it doesn't make sense in terms of the profession.
Yeah, and I'll get back to Maddie in a moment, but the issue of having this, it's an instructor-to-player ratio. And if you want to use the term student-athlete, as I think everybody does, you know, in their better angels, that instructor-to-student-athlete ratio is among the worst in college athletics. In baseball and softball, the diamond sports are underserved right now by not having that paid assistant position.
I mean, absolutely. Baseball has a 40-man roster. We're currently right now at 29. With only three paid coaches, and, you know, that fourth volunteer. So being able to give the student athletes exactly what they need. And our sport is getting very specialty, where I'm getting easily 18, 19, 20 players in every single game with pinch running opportunities and pinch hitting. And I manage my bullpen very similar to baseball. So the old adage of saying, you know, you only need one or two pitchers in softball isn't true anymore. That we are going through a very, very deep bullpen. I have five pitchers on my staff. Next year, I'm going to have nine. So, I mean, the dynamics of our roster is very different than it used to be, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
You mentioned dynamics of your roster, and with the pandemic allowing people to have an extra year of eligibility, how challenging has that been for you from a recruiting aspect where there's, I'm guessing, some uncertainty on whether a player is going to come back and whether you'll even have a scholarship at all for young ladies you're trying to recruit?
Very. I mean, I'm coaching softball, but I've learned I have to now be an accountant. it's tough. And I have nine super seniors right now, nine kids that decided to come back for their fifth year. The biggest challenge right now is it's impacting the 23 recruits out of high school, the juniors in high school, because those conversations, they're replacing my COVID sophomores, my academic juniors, my COVID sophomores that are on the team. And when I ask them, are they anticipating and staying here for their fifth year? That's 2-3 years away. So they don't know academically what their goals are going to be or their ambitions. Athletically, they don't know if their bodies are going to be able to play that fifth year. So there's so much gray area. But what it's allowing me to do now is manage over 5 years. So rather than the recruiting calendar to be every four to replace my team, it's going to be every five. And I can look at maybe some potential redshirts. So I'm looking at some freshmen right now saying, I don't want to burn their year of eligibility just for a couple pinch hit at bats or a couple pinch runs. Let's develop them and get them bigger, faster, stronger, very similar to what football does, and be able to maximize their fifth year.
Yeah, that is a subset of depth, to be sure. And you have a very well-regarded freshman class and newcomer class coming into your team. But there has to be a part of a coach's mentality that does smile when so many of those key players from your previous team and all the success that you build decide to come back, and some that maybe thought, well, I'm not sure, am I done here, and decided to come back and be a part of something that everybody hopes and expects is pretty special this year.
Really special. I think that's one of my most proud moments as a coach. And I think it starts back to a couple years ago in 2020 when the NCAA took away our postseason opportunity. One part of the sanction was the NCAA allowed any of our players to transfer, and they could have gone anywhere in the country, and they didn't. They stayed home. They wanted to play for Mizzou, and that's relaying to this year and that fifth year, where those kids, that as soon as the NCAA granted them that fifth year, that some of them immediately said, I'm playing as long as I'm allowed to play. As long as my body's letting me play, I'm going to keep playing. And even those ones like Hattie Moore, who decided that she was going to be done at the end of last year, took a couple weeks, watched the College World Series, had an emotional breakdown saying, you know what, I'm not done yet. Why would I ever be done? I have the rest of my life to work and you know, try to pay rent and start a mortgage and family. So let me keep playing as long as I'm able to do and wanting to play at Mizzou. I think that speaks volumes, especially in the nature of the transfer portal and how kids are going all over the place and immediately a drop of the hat and our kids want to stay home.
So more all the starters back from last year's team that made it to the Super Regionals. That team set program records for home runs and fielding percentage, had the best ERA in the NCAA tournament. If there is a hole in this year's team at the moment, what is it?
I don't know yet.
That's,
you know,
that's
hopefully,
good.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
Exactly.
Nice.
You know, it's we have so much experience. Our pitchers, I'm continually to challenge them. I think if we can get our pitchers at another level and we're headed in the right direction. I mean, the experience that they gained last year is phenomenal. And you can't take anything away from that experience. We have great depth. And I think our hole right now is let's get a backup catcher so Hattie Moore doesn't have to catch every single game. I would love to have two starting catchers, two number one catchers, and that way they can share some time so Hattie isn't as tired as she normally is at the end of the year.
Will that be just an area of development for players on your roster, an open competition? I mean, if you put the challenge out there, somebody's going to try to step up to it.
You would hope, yes. We have five. So we have four additionals to Hattie. We have four others that are competing right now. Megan Mull is in the mix. We have Gabby Dieters, who's a transfer from Kentucky that had a red shirt last year. And then we have Julia Crenshaw, who was the number two recruit in the country as a freshman, and she was a shortstop, and we threw her behind the plate because she's so athletic, and she's one that is really, really special. And then Addie Lang is a junior college All-American that came in and is competing behind the plate. So, again, it's such a different level, and there's so much that goes into being able to catch at our level. So they're still working on it. They're still developing, and really it's an open season for them, so I want them to keep competing.
Did Crenshaw – you mentioned how highly touted she was coming in. Did Crenshaw have – a lot of experience at catcher before
None.
Making that transition?
None.
So what led you to see, like, oh, okay, she has the potential to do that?
It was just really her athleticism. I mean, she's so athletic. She's a shortstop, and then she's competing with Jenna Laird, who's SEC Freshman of the Year.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
Okay, tough to get into the lineup right there. You're going to be a great backup. Where else can we find you on the field? Because you're hitting the ball. So it's seeing where we are lacking some depth. We've worked her in the outfield. She can compete in right field, so we have that option. But because she's so athletic, like it literally was in one day in the fall in practice that we said, hey, have you ever caught before? Let's just put you behind the plate. And to see her hands and she naturally was dropping down and blocking, that you can't teach that. That is such an unbelievable instinct that she has. My husband was visiting practice, and those of you that know, he coaches in the minor league organization. Actually, just got a job managing with the St. Louis Cardinals, so it'll be great that he's going to be close to home now. But he came and watched his practice, and he immediately said, I see Crenshaw looks like JT Realmuto, who's the catcher for the Phillies. And I know JT through high school. His sister coached with me at Hofstra, and he was drafted out of high school out of Oklahoma. By the Marlins, and he was a shortstop, converted to a catcher by professional baseball. So for him to be able to make that analogy right away and say that Crenshaw looks like JT Realmuto is a huge high compliment.
Do you see that as a talent evaluator just in players' demeanor? Is it the skill set? I mean, shortstop, if fans don't maybe understand the diamond sports, there's some thinking that says, all right, your shortstop's going to be your most athletic, naturally gifted player anyways, and then you can kind of cycle down through the positions as to what's more important. And there are different philosophies about that. But do you kind of see that diamond in the rough sometimes and say, all right, a shortstop that's natural at the high school level might be able to play other positions at the collegiate level and then work backwards from there?
You're projecting. So yes, through the recruiting process, I will look at somebody and say, hey, do you think that they might be able to play this position for us at Mizzou. They might not have the ability to be a Division I shortstop in the SEC, but we can put them somewhere else. I mean, look at Brooke Wilmus. Brooke Wilmus was a second baseman her freshman year at Mizzou. I had her competing at shortstop her sophomore year, and literally it was our opening series against Alabama that I had Brooke Wilmus and Kendall Bailey competing at second base, and I'm like, I need them both in the lineup. How do I do this? Because they both can't play second at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that morning I woke up and say, hey, Brooke, I know you never played right field before, but guess what? You're going to be in right field today against Alabama. So she went out there, and now she's an All-American outfielder. But it's the player, one, buying into it, wanting to compete, and then learning the skill set they need in order to compete at that position.
wanted to congratulate you before we get too far along about the contract extension that you got a couple of months ago through 2026. What message do you think that sends?
Commitment to our program. I want to be here. I want to be here as long as they want me here. So I just think it's remarkable, especially going through administrative changes with Desiree Reed-Francois. I mean, when she got on campus, it was a conversation that we had right away. And I'm really thankful and very fortunate that she extended that contract. But it's the commitment and to the players that they like the direction that the program's heading in, and for the recruits to give them some stability and understanding that I'm recruiting those 23 class and my contract had ended. So those 23s, if it wasn't extended, I wasn't going to be here. So being able to sell more about the philosophy and where the program's headed and what direction we're going in.
You mentioned a stable of 5 pitchers this year. You are a pitching mind yourself, but probably helpful to wrangle some of them up by having Maddie Norman around the program. You got to know Maddie, of course, in your first year in Columbia. What does she bring to the table as the volunteer assistant for this team?
So you asked earlier, what is the weakness within our program? And prior to the season, it was our bullpen management. Being the pitching coach and being the head coach and managing the game, I couldn't be in the bullpen pregame. I couldn't be in the bullpen during the game. So our young pitching staff had no mentoring. You know, I'm relying on some grad assistants. I'm relying on bullpen catchers and the backup pitchers to give me feedback on what the atmosphere is like in the bullpen and what they look like. So immediately, as soon as Chris Malvo left our program, I had said, I need someone in the bullpen. And Maddie Norman was the first phone call that I made to entice her to come back and be a part of it. And she has added so much to our staff, which allows me to manage different parts of the game and not be so locked into just what the pitchers are doing.
Well, you mentioned transitioning to more of specialist roles, kind of similar to baseball, where you're going to be using more pitchers in a typical game. Was that difficult for you? I'm guessing for a significant chunk of your career, it was like, all right, there's our pitcher. That's taken care of for 7 innings. So was that difficult for you to make that adjustment?
Not really. I mean, if you look back over my 23 years of my career, I really only ever had a horse a couple times. Okay. Olivia Glotti was the big horse that we had from 2010 until 2013. And in 2012 and 13, she ended up having 40 wins. So that was our horse. And it didn't matter what I called. It was like I was the best pitching coach in the country because I had an All-American on the mound. So, I mean, she did most of the work. But prior to that, I always had a staff. And I didn't have dominant pitching, so I had to figure out how to still get batters out. And Bill Edwards really taught me that, where there would be times that our pitcher didn't have a changeup, and I'm saying out loud, I need a changeup. And he's like, well, you don't have one. How are you going to get the batter out? So it taught me how to call a better game and still be effective in getting batters out. Watching so much baseball and watching my husband's team and how they manage their bullpen really related to what we had to do here at Mizzou. And when we first got here, we were very, very thin on the mound. And I immediately went out and got as many arms as we possibly could. And we had 7 on staff. And it was letting them know, if we have to make a pitching change every single inning to beat a team, that's what we're going to have to do, because you cannot beat them 1-on-1. So we have to beat them 7-on-1. Being able to have them understand that, but also know when you have to make those changes.
How do you balance, and does it evolve for you, managing an at-bat and calling the right pitch count and following the scouting report, and also managing the game at the same time? Is that something that you grow always in and it evolves for you? I mean, they give you so many options now to manage a game, and like you said, pinch runners and everything else. It seems like they found every way to manage a softball game, but there's probably always a new way to do it.
I wouldn't be able to do it without my staff. There's no way I could do it by myself. Mm-hmm. So it's having my assistants and my associate head coach give me information throughout the entire game that keeps me thinking and keeps me evolving, where it's, hey, so-and-so, she's struggling, or the bat matchup with the pitch matchup is better if we went to a pinch hitter. That's the information I need throughout the entire course of the game, and, you know, who's going to be on deck, and so-and-so is getting ready in the bullpen. So that way it's easier for me to make decisions because I have everything on the table.
Something we've seen at the big league level has been, okay, pitchers, the first time going through a lineup, they have this ERA, and then the second time it gets a little worse, and the third time it's like, you might want to start looking around. Are you seeing similar evolutions in softball as well?
Definitely. I mean, without a doubt, and I'm constantly very cognizant on second time through the lineup, third time through the lineup. I mean, when we're getting back up to the third time through the lineup, I better have a pitcher ready in the bullpen, because the hitters are just so unbelievably talented at this level. but also understanding, how did I get them out the first time through? I'm not going to be able to get them out the same way the second time through. Not here. So it's being able to have our pitcher be two-dimensional and not have to live on one side of the plate thinking that they're just going to be able to do the same exact thing and get the same result.
Larissa Anderson, Mizzou softball head coach, with us here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast as the Tigers get ready for the start of their season on February the 11th in the sunny climes of Florida in the Northern Lights Invitational. That's a fun event to get started this season. Northern-based teams will be playing there all together, so nobody has to look across the field and go like, man, they've seen the sun for the past month, and I haven't.
No, I'm really excited about this tournament. I mean, he's been working on this for 2 years now. His philosophy, it's going to be revenue sharing, also with ticket sales and gate fees, so that's great. So we're going to really attract a lot of fan base down in there. But I think just the whole philosophy behind the tournament, behind the Northern Lights, and inviting Northern teams only. He's very, very strategic in the RPI that he's inviting, but I think the highlight is going to be playing against UConn, and I have one of our alma maters, one of my former players, is the head coach at UConn, Laura Valentino, so that's going to be exciting playing against her. She's doing a tremendous job there, but I just think overall being down south, playing on the field again, getting the excitement back, it's just going to be a great opening weekend.
Well, as you mentioned, everybody's coming from the north, so it'll be the same disadvantage, I guess, for everybody trying to make that adjustment. But what are some things that you typically look for the first games out to see if your team is going to be in good shape when the weather warms up and when SEC play rolls around?
You know, the big thing, I just want them to go out and compete. I mean, to play the standards and the same energy and enthusiasm that we have in practice. I don't want them to go out and be tentative and afraid to fail. So that's really the first thing. The second thing is it's our pitchers being able to control the strike zone. I mean, having great control and command. If they do that, we're going to be successful. But the biggest thing is our hitters just be aggressive. You know, attack, you set the tone, get the opposing team to play to our level. We have no control over the result. We just have to make sure that we give forth the best effort that we possibly can.
You know, Coach, on our first Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast of the new year, we had a Long Island native in Lauren Hansen on the pod. I don't know if we are going specifically regional to the Northeast, but we commented, like, her game when she plays, and I know you've probably seen a little bit of the basketball team, like, she's got some of that New York sauce in her game, right? Is there a similar style of play on the softball field in the Northeast, or style of competitiveness? Because you're bringing those players to your team, and, you know, every once in a while you look out there like, oh yeah, she's from New York.
That's our shortstop, you know, a Long Island native. And Jenna Laird's dad will make sure that he sends me articles on Hansen every single time they get into the Long Island newspaper. But, you know, those kids in the Northeast, especially in softball, and I can't comment about basketball, but in softball, it's not a hotbed. You don't have schools all around the country living in the Northeast recruiting softball players. And they have the chip on their shoulder because they want to prove to everyone else around the country that they can play. And I think that is that New York swagger, you know, that obviously, New Yorkers are aggressive. I mean, you listen to me talk and you watch me coach. I'm very, very aggressive and very passionate about what I do. But it's that we're going to prove to everybody that we're going to outwork what we have against us. And that's the same philosophy that we've taken here to Mizzou, that it doesn't matter what type of talent we have, we're going to outwork everybody that we play.
A final thought to bring up to you before we let you go here. Success to you and your team this season looks like what by the time it's all done?
Hosting again. I mean, that's our big thing. Get us an opportunity to be able to host. Play in front of our home crowd. If we're hosting or hosting Super Regionals again, that means we're in the top eight. And we can control our path to the College World Series. I mean, everybody wants to go to the College World Series. That's 298 teams' dream. How are we going to do that? It's competing every single game, winning 80% of our non-conference games. Let's be in the top four again in the SEC. Let's compete for that SEC championship. And that's very, very possible with this team. We do those things, then we're going to be in the top eight and we're hosting again.
Yeah, I think that those weekends of competition, especially in the league, are going to be fantastic again this season. You go up and down the schedule. It's not like the commissioner did you guys any favors with a couple of members who will be joining very shortly either, including the Oklahoma Sooners. So that's for another day. Right now, we're just so happy. Yeah, we'll make you think about it yet.
Nope.
Coach Larissa Anderson, we'll let you go there and say thank you for being here on the podcast. Wish you all the best of success to start the season, and hopefully we get some more great memories to make by the time the spring rolls around.
Glad to be here. M-I-Z.
Z-O-U. Larissa Anderson with us on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. We'll come back and have some more fun for you after you hear some words from our friends at Shelter Insurance.
A shield against the elements. Comfort in the midst of chaos. Shelter in the aftermath of destruction. For 75 years, Shelter Insurance has remained true to our promise to be there when you need us most. This is the heartbeat of our company, our why. And throughout our history, it has never wavered. Shelter Insurance. For your auto, home, and life. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
Welcome back here to the podcast. Such a fascinating conversation about the ins and outs. I feel like we could have spent 2 hours talking about softball and the intricacies of it with Larissa Anderson. That might have made people turn off the podcast and throw their computer through a window, but I would have loved it because that sport is only growing more and more technically complex. You have quicker reaction times from your fielders. You have quicker reaction times, I feel like, from your hitters just because the distance is compressed and you can get equivalents of 100 plus on any given weekend in SEC competition from a quick twitch hitter sort of perspective. It's a difficult, difficult sport to excel in, and she's building a program where excellence is at the forefront and getting Missouri to a place where I know fans are familiar in terms of the competition.
Well, when it's commonplace that literally every single softball-playing member of your conference makes the NCAA tournament, you're in a pretty good conference. And it's pretty high-level softball that fans can see out at Mizzou Softball Stadium, which, by the way, did get some national recognition as the field of the year. Mm-hmm. Larissa Anderson mentioned that opportunity to host regionals and super regionals, and I just think that was cathartic for a lot of people. I know for me personally, the last sporting event I went to before the pandemic kind of shut everything down was a Mizzou softball game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the following year, to be able to see that place packed and loud and just really enthusiastic for the Tigers, that was a really cool thing. And Coach Anderson and her staff and her players have earned that enthusiasm. I thought it was really exciting to hear her talking about how season ticket sales are basically maxed out. I mean, it's a great facility. It's a great team. I think the expectation is top 10, top 15 in the nation and hosting an NCAA tournament regional. And for her to have it at that point and to literally have every single starter back from last year and a lot of talent coming in, it's pretty exciting stuff on the other side of Hearns.
The hope would be if the seats are all sold out or enough of the season tickets of the seats are sold out that you see a lot of butts in those seats every single time. And yes, that includes March 4th, March 5th, and March 6th. When St. Thomas and Bradley are in town for the Mizzou tournament, those are the openers. I get it. It gets chilly. We have coats here, don't we?
We do. We have coats.
We have coats and jackets. So go on out and see them.
We're checking out St. Thomas from Minnesota, new Division I program, and that's a chance to check out your Mizzou Tigers in action. Hopefully the weather cooperates, at least in terms of dry.
Yes.
The temperature, you know, early March, it can be a little dicey.
Dry and 40 is playing weather.
There you
go. I can tell you right now, dry and 40 degrees, perfect. Mm-hmm. Sun shining, it's not even that chilly.
Yeah, but right now I think if you had to pick, it might be between softball and wrestling for the programs that are just consistently right now legit competitors for national championships. Those two are right at the top. And Larissa Anderson, you know, she doesn't have the longevity here that Brian Smith has yet, but you just heard her say she wants to stay here. She just got a contract extension, so the Mizzou administration, I think, smartly wants her to stay here, and hopefully that's a relationship that lasts a long time because she's done a heck of a job so far.
And if things go well as a fan, because I know the coach and the players won't necessarily do this, circle May 6th, 7th, and 8th. It's the final weekend of the regular season. It's Missouri at Alabama, and I will put it out there right now. I think there's a very good chance as we sit here in chilly January that one has significant impacts, if not decides the SEC regular season champion. There's a very good chance of it. So there's going to be some high-level softball and high-tension softball played not only in Columbia but across the rest of the SEC as we go along. You know, Brad, before we move along here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, want to acknowledge and send our thoughts and prayers and condolences to the family of Brian DeLunas. Brian, in case you are not familiar with the name, was once, from 07 to 09 in that time period, a volunteer assistant coach at the University of Missouri with the baseball team. most recently came back to Columbia after spending stints in professional baseball with the Seattle Mariners, the New York Mets, after developing his own pitching center in St. Louis, which has worked with some of the best in college, pro, and high school baseball over the years it's been going since 2014. He passed away over the weekend as we record it now, due to a long battle with kidney disease, just 49 years old. A light to the people that he was around, not just around Missouri's program, but just as a human being. You know, I didn't get to know, through my work with Mizzou baseball, Brian extremely well, since I wasn't really in contact with him the first time around when he was in Columbia. I was still a student and doing student things, and, you know, I guess I can say that I regret I didn't have more of a chance to get to know him better, because a great mind, someone who in the baseball community I know is universally beloved and sharp as a tack, and I know that Missouri's pitching staff was so looking forward to getting into the season with him, and I understand that Brian, who bled black and gold, really, was so excited to have an opportunity to work with the team through the year. A loss taken too soon. Mizzou baseball will open its season with heavy hearts. And, you know, all I can say is I ache for the Mizzou baseball family, for the DeLunas family. He has a nephew, Austin Cheely, who's on the team, who transferred in to have an opportunity to work with his uncle this season. And, you know, he was tweeting in the aftermath about how he was thankful to have the time that he did have with his uncle and getting to play under him. It's a loss too soon, and one that I know, I think, will be a rallying point for Missouri baseball in some way as the season goes along. Not one that you want to have, but I think that they'll take the memory of Brian DeLunas with this program, not just through this season, but for many seasons to come.
Yeah, I think you covered it. Just a terrible story, terrible news to have that happen, and certainly our condolences, like you mentioned, to his family and to the Mizzou baseball family. I didn't know Brian DeLunas. We had a similar situation. I've been doing play-by-play with women's basketball for a while, and one of the assistant coaches who was there from the start, from when my time there, was Willie Cox, mm-hmm. who was an assistant coach with the women's basketball program, and he ended up dying after a battle with cancer. And you just see, you know, and Coach DeLunas had not been with Mizzou for too long, but even in that limited amount of time, you're almost spending more time with, you know, a Brian DeLunas or a Willie Cox than you are with your own family at certain points of the year. So you really establish those kinds of bonds, and in some cases that's the recruiter who convinced you to come to this program, so you're building a relationship even before you're on campus. So to have a loss like that, obviously for the other staff members who knew him and were already good friends with him, it's just one of those things that you never want to see happen, and we certainly, you know, hope for the best going forward for their family during this difficult time.
Yeah, it will be, again, heavy hearts, but a season that is around the bend. We look forward to have an opportunity to maybe share some stories with head coach Steve Beezer as time goes on the podcast, hopefully before the season. We understand that, you know, in times like these, sometimes that can be a little bit up in the air, but we look forward to having Coach Beezer on as time goes on here on the podcast as we get to the spring season, and hopefully talk a little bit more about the type of man that Brian DeLunas was. You know, I noticed something over the weekend, Brad, and that is that our influence in this world remains very, very strong.
Still got the bump going?
Because Hayden Buckley just went ahead and tore it up.
Nice.
Tore it up in the final round out in Hawaii this past weekend at the Sony Open. Mm-hmm. My man, Hayden, who long ago, it was a year ago, it was last year. The bump is multi-year.
And there's no invite, though. We couldn't, like, he didn't need a caddy. He didn't need us in the gallery to cheer him on or anything.
He had his caddy. He remember, he told the story, he had the caddy that he convinced to say, nah, don't go with the women, go with me. Okay, and went to Fortinet and went ahead and, you know, he wins the one tournament on the Corn Ferry, and then all of a sudden, here he is.
Well, I didn't know if that was only a continental United States caddy.
Oh, that's only a mainland, that's only a lower 48 sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. And,
yeah,
you
should have put in your call a little bit earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could have covered the Thursday, Friday, and then I could go to the beach, you could handle the Saturday and Sunday. It would have been perfect.
I mean, it would have been, maybe it would have been a better bump than 5 under in his final round. and in his final nine going four under with four birdies. I mean, maybe, just maybe, he would have had enough to catch Matsuyama. Matsuyama came in, Hideki, at 23 under. So maybe those eight strokes were there in the offing between us, but in all seriousness, that's a T12. He darn near played himself into an 11th or 10th place position, and we told you, man, look out for Hayden Buckley this season. You have to start wondering, and I don't believe in jinxes and curses, so I'm going to say this. You have to start wondering if Rookie of the Year on Tour goes to my man. He's top 40 in the FedEx points. He's going to be there throughout the season. He's earning trips to tournaments.
That's really exciting. I mean, you talked about T12. I mean, you're tied for 12th against the absolute best golfers in the world. I mean, not every single one was in that field, but Hideki Matsuyama was, for example. And I mean, you're going toe to toe with a lot of those guys that you see every, you know, majors weekend. I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what can come for Hayden Buckley as we go along. He keeps winning now. He's going to find himself in some very fun places by the time we get into the meat of the golf season. So congratulations to Hayden on another great finish, the Mizzou Golf alum there. In terms of the hoops, on the women's side, I feel like, Brad, the Tigers have played in so many of their games as the better team that they've, many of them that they've dropped, they've been the better team is what I mean to say, like to me anyways. It was a little bit more of a struggle against the Georgia Bulldogs most recently. Tigers fell after almost completely erasing, what was it, a 13-point deficit?
Yeah, well, it was 13 at the end of the first quarter. They were down by as much as 14.
And fought gallantly. I thought Asia Blackwell was the best player on the floor for me throughout the balance of play in terms of being athletic, in terms of being a disruptor, but just didn't have enough to finish that one. I took away from that game that the SEC is just so doggone hard. And any night you play in the league, you go up against a team with the type of size and combination of skill that Georgia has, you're going to have a fight on your hands. And yeah, Missouri fell short, but I didn't think they were out of that game by any stretch when they very easily could have been after they didn't start very well.
Well, you mentioned the quality of the competition and the last two games, an overtime loss at LSU on Thursday, which was just, that was every bit as good of a game as the South Carolina game was. Now, it obviously didn't go the way that Mizzou fans would want it to go, but that atmosphere was awesome. The crowd size was pretty similar to what Mizzou South Carolina was. It was about 6,000 fans down at the PMAC in Baton Rouge, and they were into it, and Rowdy Kim Mulkey has immediately turned that team into basically just the new Baylor, and Baylor has gone back to old Baylor. So it speaks to how good of a coach Kim Mulkey is, not just at how quickly LSU has gotten good, but how quickly Baylor has started to look, you know, kind of ordinary now, to be honest. But yeah, that was a great game. Mizzou ends up losing on a layup in the closing seconds, and then their layup in response ends up getting blocked at the end of OT. And then against Georgia on Monday night, I mean, the Lady Bulldogs are just a really good team, also top 15 nationally, and they were able to get out fast, and they were able to hold on. And both those teams are veteran teams. You know, we had Larissa Anderson on earlier in the podcast talking about having nine COVID seniors mm-hmm. who are taking their fifth year of college eligibility. It's not quite to that level in women's basketball, but there's a decent amount of that. And LSU and Georgia both have an excellent guard and an excellent post player who, in a typical college cycle, would be done. They're in their fifth year of playing, and they were starters last year, and in a lot of cases, they were starters the year before that and the year before that. Kayla Pointer and Faustina Fua for LSU, and then Jenna Stady and Q Morrison for Georgia. So they've got that experience, and Robin Pinchton was telling me pregame, we don't have those COVID seniors yet. We think we're going to in the next couple years. That's when we'll start taking advantage of it. But Mizzou doesn't have any of those super seniors and that super experience, if you will, at the college level quite yet. And so maybe that was a little bit of a factor too, because Mizzou got that down to a 1-point game on Monday night, and then Georgia immediately bucket, 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 and a lot of them were from those fifth year players, Stady mm-hmm. and Morrison. So it's still a learning process. Mizzou's best back-to-the-basket post player, LaDasia Williams, missed both those games with a groin injury. She's kind of day-to-day, so hopefully she can work her way back in. Obviously would have been an important piece in either of those contests. But Mizzou's still sitting at 13-5, 2-3 in the SEC. The rest of January is going to be, I think, really pivotal to how this goes, because Mizzou is playing four teams that I think are going to finish near the in the bottom half of the conference standings when it's all said and done. I'm not saying they're bad teams, but they're going to finish probably in the bottom half of the conference standings. Now, what's interesting about those four, though, is Texas A&M is one of those four. They're the defending SEC champions. They're 1-4 right now, but they're the defending SEC champions. That's the home game for Mizzou, and the other three games are on the road. And the one thing that Mizzou has done really well in women's basketball so far this season, they've got the signature win against South Carolina. They've had some near misses elsewhere. They haven't been able to bank more of those high-level quality wins that the committee will look at. They've avoided the bad loss relative to the net. All five teams that they've lost to so far this season, I think, are going to make the NCAA tournament or at least going to be in contention for it. Can they keep that going? They're at Vanderbilt on Thursday. They've got road games coming up at Mississippi State and Alabama. And if Mizzou, in these next four games, if they have like a winning record even in those four games, I think the Tigers are still in really good shape to make a run to get back to the NCAA tournament.
You mentioned Texas A&M, the last ride, of course, for their longtime head coach, Gary Blair, who might want to pick up a copy of the Columbian while he's in town.
You want to talk about it? That'd be a fun podcast guest. I know we're an
Inside
Mizzou. It
would be a really fun podcast guest.
I know it's an Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, but he'd be pretty fun if we can sign him up.
He's never shy, Gary Blair. Well-respected, and congratulations on a fine career, by the way, to Gary Blair. He's done a lot for women's hoops, certainly at Texas A&M, but across the country, and one last ride through Columbia, Missouri to come, in case you want to say your goodbyes.
And he'll be out there. It's so funny because Kathy Wiesen,
and pick up your candy.
Yeah, exactly. My color commentator on the broadcast, Kathy Wiesen, and I, we joke about how all these coaches, they are almost like they're the lead singer of a rock band, where they're the last guy out, or the last guy or the last woman out on the stage before the game starts. Mm-hmm. They're always the last out of the locker room, and Gary Blair just doesn't care. He's just wandering around pretty much the entire time before tip-off. He's talking to people. You know, I've had random conversations with him like 30 minutes before tip-off, and it does make you wonder what the other head coaches are actually doing in the back. But yeah, he's a character. He's one of a kind, national champion, Hall of Famer. His resume is completely secure, and yeah, he's had a great career.
At the time we record this, we don't know the result for the men's basketball team against Ole Miss, but at Alabama, did you see that Nate Oates was saying some interesting things about how Alabama absolutely should have won at Mizzou Arena when the Tigers went out there and they just kind of blitzed the Tide and got these big leads and eventually hung on for what stands still as their best win of the season over a top 25 team. All right, Nate Oates put something on the bulletin board his team and for Missouri. That's now very intriguing on Saturday, I think, between those two teams.
Yeah, sounds fun. And you have a couple of road tests for Mizzou trying to get back on track in terms of the road games. That near miss at home on Saturday against Texas A&M led for the majority of the game, and not able to close it out against an Aggies team that has certainly overachieved relative to expectations so far this season. I mean, I think some of the good things you saw from Mizzou, I liked not just the outside shooting percentage, 36%, but also the number of attempts was 11. And I think that feels like that's about right for this group, that 4 of 11 area in terms of the quantity and also the quality of the shots. They were getting to the basket. They were able to attack. And, you know, they had scoring balance from a lot of different people able to put the ball in the hole. I think 6 different players scored at least 7 points. And on a day when your best player, Kobe Brown, just didn't have his best stuff, at least offensively, you were still right in the mix against a team that looks like it's going to make the NCAA tournament this year in Texas A&M, just not able to close it out at the end. So there were some positives to take away from that game on Saturday, and we'll see if Mizzou can kind of carry those forward through the rest of SEC play.
Yeah, frustration in the execution down the stretch, to be sure, and also, you know, a bit of frustration, I think, in the fact that when A&M started that game so cold, and the Tigers are doing a great job of showing, even down low, strength to A&M. I thought just about every shot from close range was back ironing. The Aggies were just going too much for it, too hard. But the problem was in that second segment of the game, from the under 16 timeout to the under 12 timeout of the first half, they only scored 2 points. And it just felt at the time that was an opportunity to bank some more against a quality club that you knew was going to have a chance to come back in the game. And I'm not saying one thing or the other was damaging in that one. It's a loss that stings for the players. Down the stretch, there are things you could point to. But there was an opening there, and the Tigers just didn't find their shots to fall in that stretch, and that might have been something that gave them a bit more cushion at the end.
You know, it's funny because I thought the same thing. I mean, normally when you're up 12-0, you feel pretty good. But it was the same thing that you said. Mizzou had some opportunities there when A&M was just could not throw it in the ocean to make that, you know, 16-0, 18-0, and it stayed at 12-0 before the Aggies got their first bucket. And it's like, this is going to be a little more of a grind now, and ended up not going Mizzou's way.
Well, something to learn from there. And also, the next home date doesn't get any easier. As the Auburn Tigers come to town,
they may be number one in the nation when they come here.
They very well could be. So it'd be a chance to come out. I can promise you, on the evening of January the 25th, you will see an athletic achievement that is world class on Norm Stewart Court, and you will also see a basketball game because Red Panda's coming to town on the 25th, and she is it if you haven't seen her in person.
Red Panda will actually be in town on the 23rd as well for the women's basketball game at halftime, so you can catch her two different times as she tries to flip all those bowls up onto her head, which is ridiculous, while riding a unicycle or whatever that thing is.
Now there's going to be a day between the games. Is that a suggestion that we might have a chance in mid-Missouri just to see Red Panda, like, practicing?
I don't know if our ceiling is high enough here in the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast studio to have her take her shot. But
we should try to get her on the podcast.
Get the show on the road, maybe? Yeah.
We could make an attempt. I don't know if we have the pull to pull down. Officially named the Red Panda Acrobat, by the way, for everybody listening.
I did not know that.
I mean, it's not like a legal name sort of thing. It's, if you ever hear the announcement, it's always the Red Panda Acrobat. And she's the best in the world at what she does.
That's pretty exciting.
I don't think anybody else does it.
The tension, is it five bowls that's her finishing? I don't want to spoil it if you've never seen the Red Panda thing,
It's enough bowls to fit the fingers on one hand for sure,
So whenever she gets to the last set of bowls, like, the tension in the crowd, it's like a free throw in a tie game in the last minute. It's so exciting. So, yeah, looking forward to having her in town next weekend.
And if you've been living under an internet rock and don't know what we're talking about, look it up or get to the arena for the 23rd or the 25th and see it happen because, man, she's great. And best of luck before we go to Brian Smith of Mizzou Wrestling. By the time we record this, we don't know the result. By the time you're listening, you may. But a road Big 12 duel at Oklahoma. It just feels good to say.
It does. It's unfortunate. You know, they had a lot of time off since their last action. I believe it was the Southern Scuffle around New Year's Day. Mm. They were going to play SIU Edwardsville. Mm-hmm. That got canceled because of COVID issues. So didn't have that chance to kind of get the blood flowing in competition anyway, if you will. But like you said, it just feels right to have Mizzou and Oklahoma playing in a Big 12, competing in a Big 12 duel, and I guess the unofficial SEC championship coming soon, right, between those two?
The soon-to-be SEC championship. And by the way, Sunday, February the 6th is the home duel against Oklahoma State. And in pencil, we got Brian Smith coming on with us for that week. So we'll have a chance to break down Mizzou wrestling and the path forward there. We're so glad that you've joined us here on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast today, which, as always, is powered by our friends at Shelter Insurance. They're recently ranked highest in customer satisfaction among auto insurers in the Central Region 3 out of 4 years, and number one in price by J.D. Power. Shelter Insurance, we're your shield, we're your shelter. I don't have anything quippy or fun to say today. We just went right, just meat and potatoes today.
It's a meat and potatoes kind of time of year, man, where you've got the winter sports obviously in full swing and a lot of them with conference action. And, you know, we had Larissa Anderson on because spring sports are starting in a matter of weeks. So it's business time on the pod.
Put your head on a swivel. If you're referencing a certain novelty song from a few years ago called It's Business Time by Flight of the Conchords, it's not the same subject matter.
That's a good reference.
Yeah. No, thank you. We got there.
I don't know how many other people got the reference, but I actually did get the reference because that probably means I've known you for too long at this point.
Well, the 12 of us are very happy that it's come up today, and we're happy for the rest of us that we're all here together. Thanks to Larissa Anderson, of course, for joining us. He's Brad Trinago, he can't stop laughing, I guess.
I'm going to go take out the recycling.
I'm Matt Michaels. We'll see you next time on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Matt Michaels and Brad Trinago. Brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Central Bank Tiger Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and break
bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.